Okay, then the next thing on the outline, it talks again about the intensity of different karma. Okay, so if you look on your outline, it's talking about, before we talked about the six different conditions that affected whether an action was heavy or light, and we're kind of coming around to that again, except this time they talk about four conditions. Why they listed it in two different sections, I've never understood. Okay, but we're going to be talking again about the intensity of a karma. So the first factor that makes a karma intense is the intention. Okay, so here we come back to motivation again, folks, one of our favorite subjects. And so we come back again to what is our motivation and how intense is the motivation, and that these will really affect the karma and the imprint that we're putting on our mind. So, for example, some actions are really neutral. By their nature, they're neither positive or negative. So, for example, sweeping your room or vacuuming your room. By its nature, it's not positive, it's not negative. Okay, cleaning your house, driving down the road, reading a newspaper. There's lots of things, taking a bath, all these things that we do kind of, no special reason, just, habit. These actions, by their nature, aren't positive or negative. And what makes them positive or negative is the motivation that is pushing us to do them. So this is why we try and take so much care and always be checking what our motivation is, why we're doing something. Well, no, some actions by their nature, like killing or stealing or unwise sexual conduct, by their nature those actions are negative. But so many actions in our life are neither by their nature positive or negative. You read a newspaper, you read a book, you walk down the street, you buy something at the grocery store. It's like the nature of the action isn't one way or the other. But the motivation why we do it is going to determine whether it's positive or negative. Okay? So you could go to the store and you could buy food with like a lot of attachment. It's like frozen yogurt. Yeah. You see, we've gone to non-fat from ice cream. Yeah. And you can buy it with a lot of attachment. Or you can buy it with just a neutral mind. Or you could actually buy it with a positive mind. You buy it because you're going to bring it here and give it to me. So you can see the attitude. Our motivation is really good. Our motivation is really going to influence a lot. Whether something becomes virtuous or non-virtuous, okay? Same with sweeping, let's say cleaning the room, vacuuming the room, whatever you're going to be doing. You could do it either with an angry mind, like, God, I wish my roommate would do this. Why is this job always left to me? In which case vacuuming the room becomes, direct cause of rebirth in the lower realms. Yeah, because look at the mind that's doing it, completely full of hate. My roommate never does this. I always get dumped with all the blah, 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 blah. Okay? Or you can just vacuum the room for no special motivation at all. That's neutral karma. Yeah? That's kind of like wasting the opportunity. It's better than the negative karma, but still it's like the time, the life, just goodbye. Or you could vacuum the room, and this is where the thought training process comes in, And you begin to think, okay, I'm taking up the dirt of the sentient being's mind. Okay? So what's the dirt on the sentient being's mind? It's the ignorance, anger, and attachment, the contaminated karma. And what is it that cleans away that dirt? It's the wisdom realizing emptiness. Okay, so your vacuum cleaner becomes the wisdom realizing emptiness. Okay, and you are cleaning the dirt of the sentient being's mind. And so you're thinking like this while you're doing the vacuuming. And you can see, you know, by the you're thinking compassionately when you're doing that. You're thinking about the welfare of others. And somehow, even in a simple act of vacuuming your room, you have this feeling of connection and concern for everybody. Okay, so then vacuuming the room becomes a positive action. So this is why, you know, in the morning when we wake up, I really encourage everybody, first thought, you know, today I'm not going to harm others. Today I'm going to benefit them, and today I want to do all my actions with the motivation to become enlightened for the benefit of others. So you're cultivating that motivation as the underlying motivation for all of your actions that day. Yeah, so that at least the causal motivation for the day is a pure one, even though when you might get in certain situations, the negative mind takes over. At least you had initially some kind of pure causal motivation. And also, by doing that, then when you do come to specific situations, you're much more likely to be aware of what your actual motivation is at that time and try and transform it. Okay? So again, it could be, you know, you're cooking your lunch out of attachment, you're cooking your lunch out of no specific reason, or you're cooking your lunch to offer it to other people or to offer it to the Buddha at your heart. And so that's, again, why we offer our food before we eat. So it transforms all of these things, which would actually just be neutral actions, into positive actions by the force of our motivation. And then also the strength of our motivation is going to influence whether something is really heavy or light too. So you can, you know, let's say offer something to the Buddha with kind of a real, for the benefit of all sentient beings, plunk. Or you can really sit and try and, you know, cultivate that feeling and really have a, you know, kind of an open heart when you're doing it and really try and generate that motivation so that it's more intense in the mind. And then you offer the same thing. So even though the object you're offering is the same, the intensity of the motivation, the quality of the motivation is different, and so the karma that we create on our mind stream is going to be different. So similarly, whether you do a meditation and you're thinking, you know, well, I'm doing this meditation just because I want to feel good. You know, it's like I'm tense and I'm stressed out, so I'm going to meditate just to feel good and to lower my blood pressure. Or you can meditate thinking I'm going to prepare for future lives. Or you can meditate motivated that, you know, I want this meditation. It's the exact same meditation. I want this meditation to be a cause of my liberation from cyclic existence. Or you can do the exact same meditation thinking, I want this to be a cause of my becoming a fully enlightened Buddha for the benefit of others. And so depending upon what your motivation is when you're doing the exact same meditation, they're going to reap completely different results. Yeah, completely different results. Again, why cultivating the motivation is so important at the beginning of things. Okay. And that's why really taking the time, let's say, to offer our food before we eat, because we eat so often. Yeah? So taking one action like that and really transforming it and thinking, I'm not eating for my own beauty and my health, but I'm eating to keep my body alive so I can practice the Dharma, so that I can do things, you know, of service for others. And so therefore I'm eating. And you offer your food. And that's very different than just, you know, diving into it. Yeah? So you're eating either way, but the mind that's eating is very, very different. So it makes a big difference in what karma is created. Also, before going to sleep, yeah, if you just kind of fall into bed at night like, oh, thank goodness this day's over, you know, I can't wait to drop into oblivion. Yeah, that's one motivation. And you'll see how that affects the quality of your sleep. It affects how you wake up the next morning. Yeah. Whereas if you go to sleep and think, you know, I really rejoice at the constructive actions I did during this day. I need to rest my body and rest my mind so that tomorrow I can continue in this practice. And then you go to sleep with that attitude. Then, you know, your 8 hours or 10 hours or 12 hours of sleep becomes, you know, constructive karma. Yeah. Still better to sleep 6. But, you know, it's a way of transforming it. Because then you can use your time more in active practice. Yeah. I mean, you're asleep, so you can't even enjoy it. Yeah? So, I think the thing is, you know, you sleep according to what your body needs, but not this kind of mind that just indulges in sleep. You know, not like the cat, but any opportunity they get, you know. Okay. So similarly, different things are less powerful if you're ordered to do it. Okay, so let's say if you sit down and you come to teachings simply because you feel obliged or because somebody, you know, ordered you to go to teachings or something like that, then it becomes less strong than if you really have a good motivation, you go out of your own free will. Similarly, negative actions are less strong if somebody else is forcing you to do them than if you're choosing voluntarily to do them. Okay, and so, I mean, here we come again and again to the whole thing about bodhicitta. You know, why we keep trying to cultivate bodhicitta, the altruistic intention, as much as possible. Because this is the thing that makes any action virtuous and that makes it very strongly virtuous. Okay? So, doing one prostration, let's say, you know, or offering one stick of incense or, you know, writing out a check to the Red Cross for $25, with the motivation of bodhicitta for the benefit of all beings, yeah, is much more intense karmically than doing that exact same action 100,000 times without the altruism. Okay, so offering the Red Cross one check of $25 with altruism is more powerful than offering them 100,000 checks for $25. So you see, bodhicitta is very economical. But it's just again emphasizing the importance, the value, the strength of this altruism. Yeah, why it's so important. You know, and if you think about it, it's because it's you're doing one simple action, but when you're doing it, in your mind, you're related to every sentient being in the entire universe. And that's a very different mental state than when you're doing an action just completely caught in me, I, my, and mine. Yeah. So just by the power of the mind. You know, our mind is very, very powerful. And this, you know, really illustrates it. Then another thing that makes our karma intense is the field of our action. In other words, who we are doing the action towards. So we kind of went over this before, that if you do a positive action or a negative action to your Dharma teacher, to the Buddha Dharma Sangha, to your parents, to the poor and needy, these become much more powerful than if you do it to just anybody else. You know, doing it for our teacher, the Triple Gem, is because of their qualities towards our parents or whoever took care of us, you know, the people who help us a lot in our life. Doing actions towards them is powerful because of their kindness, their direct kindness towards us. And then what we do towards the poor, the ill, and the needy is powerful because of their condition, the field of compassion. So again, you know, giving towards these ones, more powerful karma, or abandoning the negative actions towards these groups of people is more powerful. And if you create karma with a very powerful object like this, this kind of karma ripens very quickly. You know, it ripens more quickly than just creating it towards any old person, because the karma is much heavier. And so here is where this thing they say in the teachings about we don't know who is a bodhisattva and who isn't, why this is very important. Because if we, let's say, give a dirty look to a bodhisattva, it's much more powerful, they say, than imprisoning and blinding all of the sentient beings. Shocking, isn't it? You know? The reason why that's so powerful is because a bodhisattva is working for the benefit of all of the living beings. Right. The bodhisattva isn't harmed. From their side, they could care less. But from our side, because we're disparaging somebody who's working for the benefit of others, because we're disparaging somebody who has an altruistic intention, then our action becomes quite heavy. Yeah? And so similarly, praising people who are bodhisattvas, or even showing them a little bit of respect, or, you know, doing some small favor for somebody who's a bodhisattva, becomes much more powerful than, you know, freeing all those sentient beings and giving them all their eyesight back. Yeah, because one bodhisattva is working for the enlightenment of all these different beings. And so they say that because we don't know who's a bodhisattva and who isn't, we should be really careful who we give dirty looks to and who we get angry at.
Would a bodhisattva be engaged in
non-virtuous actions? In general, I mean, bodhisattvas, the lower level bodhisattvas maybe can slip up once in a while, you know, the really low level bodhisattvas. But in general, they, from the side of their intention, they would never be doing anything that's negative. However, we may not understand what their real motivation is, and so criticize them. Okay? So we have that example, remember, of the Buddha when he was a bodhisattva who killed the one person who was going to kill the 499 others. Well, what would happen if we looked at that guy and he said, well, I don't care, he's still a murderer. And we got really negative towards that, simply because we didn't know his motivation. We said, oh, he didn't kill that guy out of compassion. He killed it because that guy was rich and he was going to, you know, take them all the money away or something like that. So we impute our own false reasons on the action of a bodhisattva and then criticize. Yeah. So, bodhisattvas may do things that are very confusing to us that we absolutely do not understand. Yeah. I know this very directly. I mean, my teachers, I'm sure, are quite holy beings, but sometimes they do things that I just go, better shut my mouth, you know, and then after some time, I can very clearly see that it's my negative motivation that's getting projected outwards. It's like, I look at what they're doing, and I say, if I were doing that, I would be doing it because of X, Y, and Z motivation. Of course, my motivation is kind of rotten, you know? So I impute my rotten motivation to other people. Whereas I have no idea at all why they're doing that. No idea. Yeah? And actually, with time, I've noticed that I could actually begin to see why they might be doing it for a very good reason. Yeah? But if I get really locked into my own negative conceptions, all I see is negativity. Yeah? So it's like even, you know, especially when your teacher tells you to do something you don't want to do, you know, then you're quite sure that they're acting out of negative motivation. Yeah. They're being inconsiderate. They don't know what they're doing. They're just being manipulative. Basically, what it is, you know, they're telling you to do something that your ego doesn't want you to do. So ego fights back and, of course, imputes all these negative motivations to somebody who's doing that. And then, yeah. So, but actually then with some space, we begin to see, well, maybe my teacher's beginning to, is they're actually doing that for our benefit and our welfare. But you see, we can't see it. And so we blame and get angry. Yeah. Martha, who is doing retreat down at Cloud Mountain, she has great stories about this. I used to think it was only me. You know? She has some real good stories, too, about what her teacher did to her. Yeah. And you can really begin to see how we just, you know, project so much outward. So, important to be aware of. Also in terms of the field of our actions, if we kill a human being, it's going to be much heavier than if we kill an animal because of the object that our action is directed towards. Similarly, if we save the life of a human being, it's going to be more, the karma is going to be more intense than saving the life of an animal. If we harsh talk or idle talk, something like that, towards somebody who's practicing the Dharma, and so it makes them waste their time or distracts them from their Dharma practice, that's going to be much heavier than having harsh speech or idle talk towards somebody who doesn't practice. Okay? So you can see the kind of the object, the person that we're doing the action towards, is very heavy. Similarly, you know, you help people who are doing Dharma practice, or you help a center, you do something for somebody who's really actively engaged in practicing, or for a group, or a temple, or whatever, and you're offering service like that, it becomes more weighty than doing the same thing for somebody who isn't. You know, I remember when I was in Singapore and putting out, you know, these prayer books, Pearl of Wisdom. There was one woman in the group who worked for a publishing house, and she kind of edited Pearl of Wisdom. And so, you know, I could see very clearly that, you know, because she's a very skilled editor, and she could do that editing for, you know, Mrs. Wong's Chinese cookbook, or she could do that editing for Pearl of Wisdom, which is a prayer book. And because of the power of the object, the field that she's doing it towards, the karma is going to be very different. Yeah, in between just putting another cookbook on the market versus getting Dharma prayers and things like that out and made available to others. Yeah? So any kind of action that we do in this way of, you know, helping to spread the Dharma by helping centers, practitioners, whatever, helping each other, the other people in the group, you know, this becomes much heavier than just doing the same thing towards somebody who's not practicing. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, so somebody took something of yours, but you don't know who took it, or...
Right, or it disappeared.
Yeah. Somebody took it, and so the mind's inclination is immediately to look for the person we think who doesn't like us and then think, well, they probably did it to get her. Oh, yeah, we can build you can write a novel about this. Yeah. Incredible plot line. This one did that, yeah? So what to do about that? Basically, you can see that comes from a lot of grasping. Because we grasp at the thing that is missing, we also grasp a lot of our sense of I. You know, they did it to me. Kind of my, I'm offended. You know, not only am I attached to that thing, but my pride is wounded. I'm offended. And then, of course, a little bit of anger gets thrown in for good days. So I find what's very helpful in that situation is to say to myself, oh, it's very good this happened. Yeah? It's very good that this thing I'm attached to got taken away. Yeah, because now it's showing me how attached I was to it. And actually, if I think about it, I could probably learn to live without this. Yeah, so this is a good chance for me to experiment and see if I can learn to live without this. You know, and it's very good that my pride's offended. Yeah, I'm really glad that somebody really is touching my pride, because usually I go around with my nose in the air and I think I'm such, you know, hot stuff. So it's really good that I get a little bit, you know, put in my place and be, you know, that somehow I'm shown that you know, I'm not queen of the world. Yeah. So I find that it's real. If I kind of take that thing and instead of saying, oh, this is really bad, and say, oh, it's good this happened because this is my practice. Yeah. This is showing me where my buttons are. And giving me an opportunity to work with them instead of let them get pushed. Okay. Yeah, if you're doing that with a certain sugary sweet, you know, well, yes, they can offend me, but I'm really above all of that. They can push my buttons. They can do that, and it's really good. I mean, then you're just being really, you know, really proud and arrogant, and that's not applying the Dharma technique. It might be at a certain point, you know, like you really don't feel in your heart it's good this happened, because we're really, really ticked off about it, and it's not good this happened, and we don't want this to happen again. And so you're saying it almost feels like we're lying to ourselves if we say, well, it's good this happened, because we're really, really sure that it's not good this happened. Yeah. Well, the thing is, when we're trying to apply these techniques, it's not like you say them to yourself and that means you feel them right away. What you're trying to do is to, because you see, when we get negative, it's like our energy is just, it's like a river going in one direction. When we're saying these things, we may start out saying them, and it's kind of intellectual. We don't really feel that way. But what we're trying to do is to divert this heavy stream of negative energy and at least try and to get it to flow somewhere else. So we try and do it. And at the beginning, you know, you're kind of saying intellectually, yes, it's really good this is happening. And underneath you're saying, oh, but I and I don't want to happen again. And then you keep meditating, you know, and the next day. It's not like, you know, you apply this technique and 5 minutes later your anger is all gone. You know, you need some work with this. Okay? And sometimes, I mean, my own experience, you know, sometimes it's taken me a year or two. And then when I can finally get to the point where really in my heart I feel, and see, all these techniques, we start out saying them to ourselves, but we don't really feel them. Mm-hmm. But then the more and more we do, and the more and more it's like molding clay that's a little bit hard. We need to put more effort into it, but eventually we do. We make our mind into the shape we want it to be in.